How is everyone? Today is such a big day for this administration, and I know it is a moment that all of you have been anxiously awaiting to be able to see what the event is going to look like this evening, and also to hear a little bit about the history of state dinners. And one of the groups that I want to welcome, and you guys are the first to really to see this, is our mentees. And so I want to welcome all of you to what are the place settings for tonight's event. As you know, this is very important to us that we open the doors of the White House and make certain that our youth has every opportunity to experience what is going on here. So with no further ado, the woman that really is making it happen, I'd like to introduce you to the First Lady, Michelle Obama.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. How are you all doing? It's good to see you. Well, as Desiree mentioned, this is a very exciting time here at the White House, and we are just excited to welcome all of you. We've got a big day going on. This is our first official state visit of the Obama administration. It's very exciting for us. And today, the President is welcoming and working with India's Prime Minister Singh. And this evening, tonight, the President and I are going to be hosting our first state dinner. And we're hosting for the Prime Minister and his wife, Mrs. Kaur, who we met earlier today. So one of the things we thought, and I don't know about all of you, is whether you wonder, what are these state dinners all about and these state visits? Because when I was your age, I didn't know what they were doing. So we thought it would be fun to take a little time to expose you to what's going to happen today and this evening. So that's why you are all here today, and we're really excited to have you. The state visits and dinners are a really important part of our nation's diplomacy. Throughout history, they've given U.S. presidents and the American people the opportunity to make important milestones in foreign relations. So these dinners and events are really critical to what we do internationally, and they've helped build stronger ties with nations as well as people around the world. That's what President Obama and Prime Minister Singh are doing today. And I know that all of us on our team here at the West Wing and the East Wing, we wish that we could include many, many more people in today's events, in this evening's events, because it's not often that you get to do this. But even with a big house like the White House, there's only so many people that we can invite. So one of the ways that First Ladies in the past have tried to include the broader public in on what's going on is by holding these types of events where we invite the press to share some of the incredible behind-the-scenes work that goes on to planning and pulling off this amazing day. But today we're also doing something a little different by having you all here. As our mentees know, one of the things we've talked about that the President and I have tried to do is really open up this White House to our neighbors here in Washington, D.C., especially to local students and to children in our community. Because what we know is that even though many of you guys live just a few minutes, maybe a little bit away from here, but you're close, these events probably seem like they're miles and miles away, like they're just untouchable. So that's why we really tried to think about ways to include kids in the community all throughout today's event. At the opening ceremonies today, we invited about 50 students from local schools to attend the welcoming event. And that's why we're so happy to have you guys here with us today. And for those of you who don't know, these girls are a part of our young women who participate in the White House Leadership and Mentoring Program. And we're really thrilled to have you guys here because this is your White House and we want you to be a part of what we do here. So, how do we get this stuff done? The President and I are gonna host this really neat dinner outside in the tent, but we describe it as sort of like a swan where we're kind of calm and serene above water, but we're paddling like mad, going crazy underneath. trying to look smooth, but there's a lot of work that goes into making this happen, and we have a lot of people who are helping to put it together. And it takes everyone at the White House and the State Department and the military office who've worked so hard to put all of the events together today. The guest list, the invitations, the place settings that you see here. You gotta figure out who sits where. All that fun stuff. It takes all the folks in the kitchen. We have our incredible White House chef, Chris Comerford, who some of you guys met, and the rest of our kitchen staff. And tonight, we're gonna include a guest chef tonight, a gentleman by the name of Marcus Samuelson. And he's one of the finest chefs in the country who's gonna cook the dinner this evening. Chris, Marcus, and our kitchen staff are working on a wonderful menu tonight that you'll be able to share in a little bit. It's gonna showcase the best of American cooking. It's gonna include the freshest ingredients from area farmers and purveyors. And because of all of the hard work of some other kids in the community, we've got this wonderful White House kitchen garden out in the South Lawn, and we're gonna use some of the herbs from that garden in tonight's dinner as well. But there's also more to the dinner than just the food, even though that's gonna be exciting. Dinners like these also need great entertainment. So who do we have tonight? We've got someone you guys probably know a lot about. Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson's gonna sing tonight. Yay. But we also have A.R. Rahman. He's also an Oscar winner, and he helped create some of the music for the film Slumdog Millionaire. I don't know if you guys got to see that movie, incredible movie. We're also gonna have Grammy-nominated jazz vocalist Kurt Elling, who's a Chicago hometown guy, and we're pleased to have him. And we're also gonna have the National Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Marvin Hamlisch, who's one of the greatest composers in this country. So it's gonna be an incredible night for a lot of our guests. And in just a few minutes, you're gonna hear a little bit more about the whole process of state visits and dinners from White House historian Bill Allman. So he's gonna give you a little bit of the background to how these things have worked in the past. And you're also gonna hear about the importance of protocol from Tanya Turner, who's a protocol officer from the State Department. And protocol is critical. Protocol, how you stand, how you sit, who walks where, all of that is really important. So Tanya's gonna share with us how all that works and how we think about it. But before I turn it over to them, I just wanna take a few moments to share with everyone here also why today means so much to me personally. As you've seen from this year, I have been on the other side of these visits and dinners as a guest in many countries. Since becoming First Lady, I've had the opportunity to visit 8 countries with my husband, the President. And in each and every country, during each and every visit, I have been moved by the warmth and gracious hospitality that our host and the citizens of the countries that we visited have extended to the President and to me. It means a great deal when you're visiting and your hosts make you feel like you're at home, like they're excited to see you. It means the world. Each visit has also been unique and profound in its own way. It's not just the pomp and circumstances and the lights and the cameras and the fancy dresses. But when we've gone to other countries, we've done some incredible things. We've seen the Jewish Quarter in Prague. We visited the Sistine Chapel at the Vatican. We've been to the Colosseum in Rome and the American Cemetery on the beaches of Normandy in France, where the world comes to honor the brave soldiers who died there. These places are more than just monuments to history, truly. They compel us to see the world through a broader lens, not just from your own backyard or your school or your neighborhood, but they teach us to look at the world broadly and to look at our place in it in a different way, to respect and admire each other's cultures and traditions in a very different way, and to honor all the values and the interests that we all have in common across the world. You see this not in the pomp and circumstances, but in the people that you meet. We've met tons of incredible people over the course of our trips. The children and the nuns who cared for them at a beautiful orphanage that I visited in Russia. Young girls, girls just like many of you that I got to spend some time with in London at the Elizabeth Garrett Anderson School. It was an amazing day. The nurses in the maternal health clinic in Ghana in Africa that we got to see. See, all these people, you know, the children, these caretakers, the girls, their teachers, these nurses and mothers that you've seen, that we've met, what you learn is that they all want the same thing as you do, as we do. Folks around the world, they want to live in peace. They want to pursue their dreams just like you guys do. And they have big, huge dreams just like you. And they hope for a brighter future for the next generation, just like we hope for you. Doesn't matter where you're from, these dreams are the same. So what we figure out from these visits is that all across the world, no matter what our religions or races are, that we are all building that future together. And building that future is not just the job of any one country alone. No one country can do it by themselves. It's the responsibility of all of our countries all over the world to work together. And that's why the president has worked so hard to begin what he's called a new era in our relations with the world and other countries. He's worked to strengthen diplomacy. He's worked to renew old alliances so that we're talking differently with countries and people that we haven't talked to before. He's building new partnerships. And these partnerships, he hopes, will be based on mutual trust and respect. But one of the things that the president has said is that this new era of engagement can't just be between governments. You know, it's not just about the presidents and the prime ministers getting along. This new era of engagement also has to be between the people, the diplomats, the business leaders, the scientists, the healthcare workers, and yes, the teachers and the students. Young people just like you are a part of building that future. And that engagement, the ability to exchange with one another as young people as you are, is critical. And that's why the president, when he goes to another country, he makes it a point to visit and to speak with students all around the world. Whether he was in Europe or Cairo or China, he always reaches out to young people. And we need to expand that type of educational exchange so that students like all of you here have the opportunity to experience and learn from other cultures and to share your own culture, however unique and different, with other parts of the world. Deepening these ties is one of the things that the president and the prime minister are working on today. One of the reasons for the trip to India and the state dinner is for these leaders to work together, whether it's along the lines of working on the economy or climate change or global health. They know that young people like you, students, our future leaders, are among America's greatest ambassadors and India's greatest ambassadors as well. In fact, India sends more students to study in this country than any other country. This year alone, more than 100,000 students from India came here to America to study somewhere. So by doing that, they learn from us, and we learn from them in a very fundamental way. And as a result of those interactions, we're all the richer for it. And after today's visit, we'll hopefully expand these exchanges even more. And who knows, maybe one of you all sitting at this table, one of our little mentees, will be living and studying somewhere in India, maybe New Delhi or Mumbai or Bangalore. Just imagine that. Start thinking about your future in that way. This visit at this table is the beginning of that for all of you. Because again, governments alone can't build the future that we want for the world. That's the job of each and every one of us. So that's one of the lessons for today. It's our job, and that's one of the lessons of the relationship between the United States and India. Back when the president was a senator, he kept a picture of Mahatma Gandhi, the father of India, in his office. And it was before he was a senator. He was always a big supporter and admirer of Gandhi, because Gandhi inspired so many people in India and all around the world with his example of dignity and tolerance and peace. And with a simple call, Gandhi would say, "To be the change we wish to see in the world, we are that change. We are that change." So again, today is a celebration of the great ties between the world's two largest democracies. That's the United States and that's India. But it's also an opportunity to deepen those ties and a reminder to be the change that each of us seeks, whether that's in your home or in your school or in your community or in your country. You are all the change that we need. So I'll stop lecturing. And I will now turn it over to Bill and to Tanya, who will talk a bit more about the history and protocol, and then we get to test out some of the food. So again, we are proud to see you, happy to see you. We're going to see you again in December, because we're going to do some more fun stuff. I know we have three new mentees here. Can you guys, the new mentees, raise your hands? I see some new faces. Welcome. It's good to have you. We're going to have a lot of fun. Just ignore them. Pretend that they're not here. And I'll turn it over to Bill. Thank you guys so much, Bill.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today we understand a state dinner to be when the president entertains a counterpart leader from another nation, usually at a gala evening at the White House. But such diplomatic travel was not so common prior to World War II. And in the 19th century, state dinners at the White House were actually three events that the president held for the diplomatic corps, for the cabinet, and for the Supreme Court. So there were three formal dinners throughout the 19th century because visitors from abroad were extremely rare. Those who came were usually members of the royal families of other countries, coming over to see what was going on in America. And that included the Prince of Wales, the heir to the British throne in 1860, and the Grand Duke of Russia in 1877 was received by President Mrs. Rutherford Hayes. They were not always male visitors. In 1893, President Mrs. Grover Cleveland entertained the Princess Eulalia of Spain. She had been sent over with the idea that relations with the United States and Spain were not too good because we advocated Cuban independence from Spain and Spain didn't. And so there was a state dinner held. And the princess arrived. She was supposed to go upstairs to be received on the Oval Room on the second floor, just as the Prime Minister of India will be this evening. But she got here a little late. She rushed straight to the East Room. The Clevelands had to rush down from upstairs. The band started the march. They all started processing. And apparently the confusion made an otherwise controversial dinner into one that was enjoyable and relaxed in the end. The first actual state visit to the White House was in 1874 under President Mrs. Ulysses S. Grant. And it was King David Kalakaua, the King of the Hawaiian Islands. And state dinners were much smaller than they are today. In fact, probably everyone on the north side of this table, you're not actually in the dining room in 1874, because that whole north end of this room wasn't part of the state dining room. It was a staircase. It led to the private quarters. It was how the family went up and down to their bedrooms. So the dining room was much smaller. It ran east to west. It had a fireplace at each end. They'd put a long rectangular table. Maybe sometimes, like for the Hawaiian dinner, they'd put a branch at each end of the table and they'd create a great I-shaped table. But dinner was 40 or 50, and that was the biggest kind of dinner you had in the White House. For the Grand Duke of Russia, in fact, they had just a single table, 36 guests. They served soup, fish, roast beef, lamb chops. A few vegetables were thrown in just to make it somewhat more healthy, but in the 19th century, 20 and 30 courses were not uncommon for a state dinner. In 1902, President Theodore Roosevelt had a formal dinner for the brother of the Kaiser of Germany. And he wanted to have a very large party, so he had it in the East Room instead of here in the smaller dining room at the other end of the building. It was an all-male dinner. No women were invited. Now, the Prince of Germany thought himself better than all Americans. And the ambassador from Germany actually suggested that the prince would go into the dinner by himself first, at which point President Theodore Roosevelt replied, "No person living precedes the President of the United States in the White House, because this is his home and here's where he's in charge." But later in 1902, President Theodore Roosevelt renovated the White House, and he had this state dining room enlarged to what you see today. But imagine it in 1902. The walls were dark wooden paneling, and there were wild animal heads hanging all around the walls. There was a moose above where I'm standing today. Looked more like a German hunting lodge. Too bad the Prince of Germany had already gone home when Teddy Roosevelt got done renovating this room. But that larger room could accommodate a U-shaped table, or even an E-shaped table, a U with a branch down the middle. And you could have as many as 100 people for a formal event. Probably the most famous pre-World War II state visit was in 1939. The King and Queen of England came to the United States. Now, this was before the tradition of having them come and have an official arrival ceremony out on the lawn. So when they arrived at Union Station on a train from Canada, President Mrs. Roosevelt went and greeted them at the train station. Then they had a parade back to the White House. They said 500,000 people lined the streets of Washington to see the King and Queen of England on the first visit by probably our most famous royal neighbors and relatives. There was a grand dinner at the White House, the first one held beneath this portrait of Abraham Lincoln, which had just been given to the White House by the Lincoln family in 1939. The animal heads were long gone. They were kicked out of the house in the early 1920s. The King toasted to friendship between the United States and Great Britain in a world of peace. 2 months later, World War II broke out in Europe, and peace was gone for a while. And so were state visits to the United States. But that state visit in 1939 was perhaps most famous for the fact that President Mrs. Roosevelt took the King and Queen to their home at Hyde Park, New York, and had a picnic for them. So nobody remembers what was served at the state dinner at the White House. Everyone remembers that the King and Queen were served hot dogs. In the early 1960s, President Mrs. John F. Kennedy changed some of the state dinner practices. The meal was reduced to 4 courses. Circular tables were used to replace the formal single table. Men and women left dinner and enjoyed coffee together in the parlors. Prior to that time, the women were expected to enjoy coffee in one room and the men with coffee and probably cigars in another room altogether. For the state dinner for the president of the Sudan in 1961, Mrs. Kennedy actually invited the teenage daughters of then Vice President Lyndon Johnson, because she thought they would enjoy the after-dinner entertainment by the American Shakespeare Festival Theater. The girls telephoned Mrs. Kennedy to be sure there wasn't a mistake, because they were only 17 and 14, and they were sure they weren't really supposed to be invited to a state dinner at the White House. But Mrs. Kennedy assured them that no, she wanted them to be guests, but their mother, Mrs. Johnson, said, "You can't have the wine." Then in 1964, President and Mrs. Johnson, having become the new president, had the first state dinner in the Rose Garden. And it was for the Chancellor of West Germany. And music that night was provided by the National Symphony Orchestra, who was going to be part of tonight's entertainment as well. For some especially noteworthy visitors, dinners have been held in the East Room, not just in 1902, but in more recent times, where you can accommodate guests up to about 230. So 130 or so in this room, 230 in the East Room, more on the grounds, in tents. For example, within a single week in 1994, the White House welcomed Boris Yeltsin, who was the leader of a new post-Soviet Russia, and Nelson Mandela, the first black president of the formerly apartheid Republic of South Africa. But not every state dinner has gone on without a hitch. In 1994, at a Rose Garden dinner for the Emperor of Japan, one important dinner guest failed to arrive, the person who was to be the host of his table. So the social secretary recruited a very nervous last-second replacement. That was me. Early in his administration, President Jimmy Carter invited his 8-year-old daughter, Amy, to come to a state dinner. Apparently, she was bored because she spent the evening reading a book while the other guests were talking around the state dining room table, the tables. In 1976, to honor the bicentennial of the American Revolution, there was a big dinner for Queen Elizabeth II of Great Britain in a tent in the Rose Garden given by President Mrs. Gerald Ford. That afternoon, most of the resident staff, including myself, rushed outside to try to hold the tent down during an afternoon thunderstorm that might have taken off tent, tables, china glass, the whole thing might have disappeared in a big summer storm in Washington. And back in 1927, at a dinner that President Mrs. Calvin Coolidge gave for the president of Cuba, a guest managed to break the cane seat of a chair not unlike the ones you're sitting on today. And at the end of the dinner, when he stood up, the chair came up attached to his posterior. So some things happen, all part of the tradition and history and grandeur of the of state dinners and every other event that takes place at the White House. So welcome, everybody, and I hope you have a nice afternoon. Thank you.
Good afternoon. It is an honor and a privilege for me to be here today on the occasion of the official visit of Prime Minister Singh and Mrs. Kaur. I thank Mrs. Obama for inviting me to speak to you today. I would also like to acknowledge the experienced leadership of Ambassador Capricia Penevic Marshall, the U.S. Chief of Protocol of the United States. One of Ambassador Marshall's goals as Chief of Protocol is to cultivate an environment for successful diplomacy. Our work hopefully helps to achieve that goal while strengthening the United States relationship around the globe and advancing the foreign policy goals of the Obama administration. Protocol is historical and about common ways for nations to show each other respect. And as a member of the protocol team for over 20 years, I can say without a doubt that state and official visits are always a highlight of my job. As a matter of fact, Bill, you mentioned the visit of President Mandela. I, as a young protocol officer, was the protocol officer for President Mandela's state visit during the Clinton administration in 1994. And I was completely blown away by Mr. Mandela and the ceremonial aspects of state visits. Once the president invites a leader to the United States, our office immediately starts working with the embassy, the White House, the United States Secret Service, the Andrews Air Force Base, the Military District of Washington, on all aspects of the visit. Our protocol officers work on the front lines of diplomacy every day. In fact, a protocol officer is with the Prime Minister and his delegation now and throughout the entire visit to ensure our honored guest visits is comfortable and everything runs smoothly. The Office of Protocol makes and produces detailed schedules to ensure that all of the Prime Minister's motorcade movements and movements at different events run efficiently and on time. We choreograph the visit like a dance. All of the movements have to flow smoothly and succinctly along with correct timing to ensure that their experience in the United States is positive and productive. The Office of Protocol is heavily involved in several key aspects of the planning and execution of an official visit. We like to say that protocol brings the guest to the table. An official visit cannot occur without the guest of honor attending, right? So when Prime Minister Singh and Mrs. Kaur arrived at Maryland at Andrews Air Force Base on Sunday, the Office of Protocol was there to welcome them to the United States on behalf of the President and Mrs. Obama. Protocol extends the first hand to a visiting foreign leader upon arrival in the United States and the last before they depart. I would like to share a little of the logistics and background of what goes into a visit. At Andrews Air Force Base, upon Prime Minister Singh and Mrs. Kaur's arrival, a red carpet was in place. The official greeters included high-ranking American and Indian officials, along with a military honor cordon and military band, which played the national anthems of both countries. Also present were young students from the Indian American community, approximately 100, and they stood along the fence line at Andrews Air Force Base. After the playing of the anthems, if I could just share what happened that day, and it was so exciting. After the anthems were played, the Prime Minister and his wife will traditionally go into the vehicles and depart for their residence in Washington. Well, to our surprise and excitement, the Prime Minister looked over to the fence line, saw all of these young people in their national dress, and he and his wife walked over and greeted each and every one of them from the beginning of the line until the very end. Afterwards, they departed. Now, imagine the exuberance and excitement that these young people experienced at that moment. The White House arrival ceremony. President Kennedy's administration brought the arrival ceremony to the South Lawn of the White House from the grounds of the Washington Monument to provide a more welcoming and personal touch. The United States military plays a large and vital role in the full honors ceremony as they provide the music, the national anthems, the 19-gun salute, the Joint Service Military Honor Cordon, and red carpet. As a courtesy, the United States anthem is never played before the foreign national anthem on U.S. soil. Also, a foreign guest always stands to the right of the president because it is traditionally the place of honor. My favorite part of the arrival ceremony is the musical troupe in review by the Old Guard, which is part of the ceremony when it occurs outside. And I'd like to just share a little information about the Old Guard. The Old Guard's origin dates back to the Revolutionary War when General George Washington personally selected a group of Continental soldiers to be his personal escorts. These soldiers were handpicked because of their high standards of discipline, conduct, military proficiency, and professionalism. Today, these standards of excellence are the hallmark of the unit and make it the Army's oldest active duty infantry regiment. The official luncheon. Right now, as we meet, the first official luncheon of this administration is taking place at the U.S. Department of State in honor of the Prime Minister of India and Mrs. Kaur. This is a long-standing tradition. In past years, either the Vice President or the Secretary of State has hosted. This year, it is co-hosted by Vice President Joseph Biden, his wife, Dr. Jill Biden, and Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. This year, we have approximately 220 guests. They are members of the President's Cabinet, members of Congress, and other U.S. government officials, along with top business leaders, academia, and journalists. It is an array of guests representing many different areas of interest. Ceremonies and traditions. The protocol elements are very important during an official visit. What do I mean when I say protocol elements? The White House and other people help to organize as a way to show a show of respect to the people of India. The White House official arrival ceremony and state dinner are both examples. It is an acknowledgement of our important friendship and a step towards strengthening our partnership. These are time-honored ceremonies based on the history and traditions of the United States and showcase our hospitality while offering gratitude and our friendship. In conclusion, I'd like to think when our efforts go unnoticed, we have done our jobs well. Protocol is the behind-the-scenes work of American diplomacy, and that makes us very proud to serve. Thank you.
I would like to thank everyone for coming this afternoon, and a special welcome to our young guest again. You are going to be the beneficiaries of a wonderful dessert that we have planned for this evening, so enjoy. Thank you again.